driving in the sun, looking out for number one. California, here we come. La 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 la.
That's right back where we started from, is what you la 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 through. California.
And one more time, California. And we promise we won't sing the whole episode, but why don't you kick things off for us, Daniel?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to We Watch TV, the podcast about the TV that we watch. I am Daniel. She is Hope. This is episode 65. If you haven't figured it out already, we've wrapped up the OC in its entirety. We're done. It is done.
What a ride.
It is done. And we're going to talk about that this episode. And it's been a ride.
It has been a ride. And I'm going to miss hearing the California song.
I think you can just listen to that like on Spotify and stuff.
Do you remember the first time that we went to California together?
I do.
And I played that on the way there. And then what song did I play when we got off the plane?
It was the Miley Cyrus song.
Yeah, I hopped off a plane at LAX with my dream in my cardigan.
She made LAX sound a whole lot better than it actually turned out being.
Yeah, it was not the best airport I've ever been to. I feel like it's one of the more stressful airports.
Yeah, it was pretty stressful.
Not the same stress of MCO in Orlando, but like the fact that it's so big.
Yeah.
I didn't see a single celebrity. Maybe it's because I didn't have my dream in a cardigan.
It's possible.
But and then when we drove from the airport. No, it was because we rented a car.
Yeah, we rented
a car.
So
when we got in our rental car, I then played again the OC theme song, California by Phantom Planet, because that's the kind of person I am. And I was like, oh, we got to play this in the car. It was quite a memory.
Yeah, it was something.
I do think it's a good, in terms of theme songs, it's not like a top five theme song, but it's pretty good.
It's pretty good, yeah. It's certainly in the tops of lists. Like
it's no Game of Thrones or Golden Girls, which are like the two best things.
Yeah,
ever.
Especially if you're talking. I see. Okay, now we're going to get into sorting things, and I will say that I wouldn't put Game of Thrones and Golden Girls in the same category. I know they're technically both theme songs.
Yeah, but we're just going by theme songs.
But okay,
what would be your top theme song for a show?
My top theme song?
I think I'm going to have to, even though it's not my favorite
show. Of all time?
Even though it's not my favorite show, I think the Game of Thrones theme song is just...
You put me on the spot.
Like, iconic.
You've put me on the spot. I do agree. I echo everything you just said. I like the Game of Thrones themes. I also enjoyed that they showed you the places you were going to be seeing in the episode, so
yeah,
it was actually
like maps.
Different. Each week. I thought we were talking about the OC, and here we are going down.
Well, but it was really
songs.
A simple question.
It's not. I mean, I really love Next Generation's opening credits.
Oh, wow, you can't make it through.
I wasn't going to. You knew I wasn't going to.
The Golden Girls one is a banger.
Golden Girls
too.
Is a banger. Absolutely.
Thank you for being a friend.
Rock solid banger.
Traveled on the road and back again.
I don't know. The OCs, I love the song, and it fits so well with the show. I don't know if I can say the whole package of the opening credits, which includes the visual element.
Well, that's just very early 2000s.
Yeah, that's probably what brings it down, is it doesn't have the visual element of the credits that goes along with, like, the Game of Thrones had it all. It had the song, it had the visuals and everything. And then the Golden Girls... I mean,
it's
the visual element's not there, but the Golden Girls song is just...
Okay, they do have some visual elements, just the scene of Blanche where she's sauntering. Like,
yeah.
It is.
You're right. No,
yeah.
You're right. Yeah,
it
all fits there. So.
But like you said, we're not here. We should do that as a future episode, though.
That's a good idea. We should write that down.
Theme songs.
Write that down.
But yeah, I was like, write it down right now. But let's get into it. All about the OC, like Daniel sighed, because it's been a long time that we've been doing this. We have come to a close with the OC. Four seasons. The OC, we started our rewatch in August, because August was the 20th anniversary of the premiere of the show, which makes me feel incredibly old. What about you?
Yeah, I am old. I don't just feel it.
It was that late summer 2003. We were freshmen in college, just youngins ourselves. And I feel like the OC and really that kind of One Tree Hill zone, like those were my teen shows. They were my teen dramas. Like Dawson's Creek, I would consider that up there too. It's a little bit older. While I really enjoy 90210, and I definitely watched it when it wasn't appropriate for my age, and then I watched it in syndication, that was kind of more of like the Gen X. Mm-hmm. This was the OC, One Tree Hill, kind of that gang of shows was like our elder millennial teen dramas. The kids today don't know, honestly, how good they could have had it. Like, I love The Summer I Turned Pretty, but you're only getting like 8 to 10 episodes with that. Talk about that first season of the OC where we had like over 20 episodes, well fed. And you used to only have to wait like a few months in the summer. Well, the good old days.
It's how, like you say, we watched 4 seasons of the OC. It feels like more.
So much longer because streaming has really changed the game. Even for these teen dramas, like almost gone are the days. Like, I don't know. Like, I think probably Riverdale, which I would loosely consider a teen drama because it went totally off the rails. I think it had a normal length of show, like what you would see, like over 15 episodes at least.
Yeah. I mean, even the regular network shows today are barely getting to 20 anymore.
Yeah.
Like all of them have been reduced in size.
And what the OC did, I feel like, was brilliant with that first season. They aired that batch of episodes like before kind of the fall set of shows came on. Then I think there was a little bit of a break and it came back. We had that cliffhanger of Marissa and Tijuana. You weren't sure if she died or whatever. And apparently, according to the writers, they didn't think that Misha Barton was going to, like, test well with the audience. And there was consideration that they were going to kill her off in that episode. Hmm. And I'm like, oh, instead you just waited to season 3. And then it comes out, like, who is the face of the OC?
Yeah.
Marissa Cooper. Like, she is who I think about when I really think about the show as a whole. Like, I picture Misha Barton's face.
Do you think the decision by Fox to start it early like that, do you think that has anything to do with the success they'd had probably like a decade earlier with that second season of 90210?
Absolutely. I was getting ready to get into that. I'm so glad. You do listen when we're running and I'm talking to you about stuff. I'm so proud. Yeah, 100%. 90210, the first season, it was very different than the other seasons. Yes. It was less like soap opera-y. It was more kind of like, it was still about the focus was on the kids, but it was kind of a lesson of the week type thing. Yeah. And then they started getting in the Brenda Dylan kind of relationship, and I feel like that's where things started to pick up steam. And they aired that set of episodes to start off season 2 in the summer, and it was like right after Brenda and Dylan like broke up because she had the pregnancy scare, and the show just blew up and like went like to a whole other level. And I absolutely think that's what Fox was trying to do. I wish they had done it with the other seasons. I get from an actor, like a working perspective, you have to put you know, a lot more work into do those summer things. Because I listened to the 90210 podcast that Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling do, 90210 OMG, I think that's what it's called. And they always talk about like how crazy, like they would go like 30 some episodes of 90210. Like it was insane.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah.
I think if I had to pick my perfect like range, and it's going to vary from show to show depending on what you're doing. If the modern shows could move away from 10 and get up to 15, I don't need them to go to 20. But a nice 15 I feel like would give me more of what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
You're never going to see shows like get to 100 episodes
anymore.
And now
you have to wait so much longer because a lot of the streaming shows, they film more like movies. And like The Summer I Turned Pretty, I highly doubt we're getting it this summer. They're filming it right now because I think originally we were going to, but they were delayed from the strike. So you're essentially waiting like a whole year, a whole year for like way less episodes. I remember like those summer months when I wouldn't have my shows, like feeling just like absolute torture. So I think it's great that the OC was introduced early. I really love it. I'm sad it's coming to a close. I can't believe that we've been doing the OC rewatch since August, though. And you're right. Like, all the content for a show with only 4 seasons, it does feel like we've been doing this for months.
I mean, season 1 in particular, and season 2 to a certain extent, that felt almost like four seasons.
Yeah. I think nowadays with season one, and we'll get into this a little bit more in depth when we talk about the series as a whole. I feel like nowadays, like season one, all the different storylines we had would comprise like five seasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of like a streaming show.
So much stuff they were getting in there. So,
but we have finished. So we watched the series finale last night. We've let it kind of ruminate here a little bit. And I'm just going to read you the description from IMDb.
Internet Movie Database.
And I will know we will not download your app.
No, we will not.
So
never.
Quit asking.
Ever.
Ever. So there were only 16 episodes of season four. So it was clearly a short season. I certainly hope that the writers didn't know that they were going to only have 16 episodes. Because if they did know, they didn't do a great job.
Should I go into that right now before you read the description? Like,
sure, why not?
I think I talked about it last week, too. They had to have written their entire slate out to like 20 episodes. And then midway, because you know how they film, they're only maybe at max a couple of three, four episodes ahead of what's actually on TV.
Yeah.
They had to have been canceled midway through.
Like I said, I certainly hope so.
Listen, here's how many you've got left. Figure it out. And I think that's where that.
So you're giving the writers a lot of credit.
I hope. That is what I hope.
If
that
they
happened.
Knew, then they did a bad job.
They did a very bad job. And last week's episode, I panned their decision-making on that earthquake, and I stand by it. That was a terrible way to transition. Yeah. I understand why they needed to do the transition, but I hate it. Anyway, okay. Read the episode description.
There were so many things that could have been fleshed out better in this last season with just a few more episodes to get to 20. So anyway, the season four, episode 16, The End's Not Near, It's Here, aired on Thursday, February 22nd, 2007. That's another example of when you know your show's not ended in May, you're in it in February. 6 months after the earthquake, everyone makes decisions that will determine the rest of their lives. This is not only the season four finale, but the series finale as a whole. So it picks up, as like we said, 6 months after. Kirsten is big and pregnant. Apparently Julie's pregnant too. They kind of leave it up. Suddenly Julie is engaged to who?
Bang.
The Bullet. The Coens are living at Julie/Dr. Robert/Summer's
house. They just
kind of
glazed over that because Julie keeps referring to it as her house.
Well, Julie's not the one that's referring to it as her house. Everybody else refers to it as Julie's house.
Yeah.
Because you and I are always like, isn't it more Summer's house? But whatever. Dr. Roberts is off in Seattle Gray saving unicorns and working with Dr. Bailey and Meredith Gray and everybody. Yes.
The joke I made during the episode, I said it's surprising that they didn't kill him off in the 6 months and just make a joke about it. Like all the doctors are always dying at Seattle Grace Hospital.
Well, I mean, I have a point on that we will get to as we get into the depth of the finale.
Okay.
A theory, if you will.
Oh, a theory. Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
So, yeah. So the Coens' house, they're thinking it's going to be remodeled or something in the work. It's being assessed. So everybody's living at the Roberts/Cooper home. It seems like Taylor and Ryan have broken up again. Shocker. Taylor is back in Paris. Ryan is still clearly in love with Taylor. He basically references it. Seth and Summer basically turned into Hope and Daniel during the pandemic. The early days of the pandemic, they're just sitting in their chairs, eating food and watching TV. I feel like that whatever they're watching was like the equivalent of our Tiger King. Now, we both had a so-called like essential jobs, so we still worked during the pandemic. Like, I can't imagine if we had not worked, like how far down, like we could have totally been like them, not realizing like our animals had babies because Pancakes had babies. Pancakes is apparently not a boy. It's a girl and has had babies.
Was this like immaculate rabbit conception? Like where did she get another rabbit?
Well, let's see. We all know what rabbits are known for.
But there has to be two.
Yeah, and Seth and Summer weren't paying attention because they were sitting in their lazy boys eating food, not bathing, and watching some show.
And there's a lot of rabbits just randomly running around the OC.
Probably a wild one. Wild little bunny. Who knows? Maybe Pancakes, she needed some syrup and butter to, I don't know. That's a poor joke.
Syrup and butter.
Just roll with it. Just roll with the innuendo. I feel like, though, like, if we hadn't had work, like, because we were basically that, like, when we were not working, since we didn't go anywhere ever, except for to go to the grocery store, which you did, like, that's all we did was sit at home and watch crazy TV. And it gives me Tiger King vibes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I would ever watch Tiger King.
No,
because remember we tried to watch the second season, and it just did not hit with anybody.
No.
I am never going to financially recover from this. Carol Baskins. Like, it just, my favorite part of that show was when, like, the one guy comes out on the jet ski, and he's like, and then I became an FBI informant. So, yeah, I feel like that was just us in a pandemic time period. Imagine if we had been, like, young, too. So everybody's lives are, like, on standstill. I don't know why they came. I remember it now. Julie basically says Frank found out, because somehow it's revealed that, yes, it's not the Bullets baby, it's Frank's baby. Frank found out she was pregnant, freaked out. Big shocker.
Pulled a classic Atwood.
And then I guess Julie liked the Bullet enough. And clearly this indicates that she probably did sleep with the Bullet at some point. Although he knew it wasn't his baby.
I don't want to imagine that.
I don't know. And apparently the Bullet has several children.
Yes.
Like one Lubbock.
He has 12.
Austin.
Suggesting that.
Hanoi.
Yeah.
Like, so, and they're all boys. So we have that plot going on, and then
that got a little silly.
Yeah, I don't really know what we were doing there. I still like to see the Caitlin Bullet scenes. They're fun.
Yeah, I don't know. All that stuff with the Bullet and his kids, and they're all wearing cowboy hats and named after the cities they're from.
I totally forgot about that.
That got a... There was some silliness in this episode that I did not jive with me.
Okay, so basically a lot of the events are leading up to Julie and Bullet's wedding. And in the meantime, we have the Coens trying to figure out what's going on with their house. Well, it comes to find out that they said, like, the repairs would end up being more than the value of the actual house.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, how badly was this home damaged? Because that's a very expensive home.
Yeah, and
housing market was about to go to crap, though, right?
I do want to criticize. Yeah, it was. It would have been about
like
that
a year
time.
Later, yeah.
I want to criticize that, though, because Kirsten worked in real estate for like 15 years.
She wasn't the architect, though.
And Sandy worked at the Newport Group for a while, and both of them should have known, because they all seemed real shocked when they heard that information. And it's like, you guys.
Yeah, but none of them did like the building plans, like the actual work.
You run a real estate company long enough, you're going to learn a few things about that kind of stuff.
Sandy was too concerned about the hospital.
Okay.
I never even realized, like, I know, I guess he, like, quit the Newport Group, but they
just kind of hand-waved that away.
They were like, goodbye,
like,
we're done.
This thing that's been very important to the entire plot of the show since season one with Caleb all the way to now, we're done with it.
They
so bye.
Waved that goodbye about, we only saw, I think, the diner, like, twice in season four,
yeah,
and the bait shops, and then we were stuck with that horrible outdoor mall set that I absolutely hate. Like, budget cuts would be the theme of season four. Anyway. So Kirsten and Sandy have to go look at houses, and they're like, oh, we have so much money, but every house in California, and this, like, they all look the same in this area in Newport. What are we going to do? We miss our Berkeley house. It had character. So Seth and Ryan, being the now Ryan, I mean, he's not really an entitled rich kid, but he's been with the Coens long enough, being a little bit, I'm going to call it what it is, sweet gesture, a little bit entitled, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Decide that they're going to take a trip to Berkeley and go find the house and ask if they can buy it, if their parents can buy it from people that clearly live there. And now Berkeley is near San Francisco, correct?
I believe so, yes.
That's an expensive part to live in California as well. I guess it's just a different type of, like, wealth.
Yeah. No, it's expensive around there because that's like Silicon Valley is around that area. Yeah, it's expensive.
So we meet the two, two men that own that house, and they're just basically like normal people. Like, sorry, that's cute that you like to live here. Fun story, but this is our home.
Yeah.
Have a nice day. But again, Seth being the, even though he tries to act like he's not, let's call it what it is, rich little kid, is like, no, we got to make this happen. So they push on it. I guess somehow they decide that Sandy could do the Sandy Cohen charm, because Sandy is a charmer. And Kirsten can't fly because she's pregnant, so she can't fly commercial. But who do we know that has an airplane?
Bang.
The Bullet. So
Mr.
Bullet,
Plot Device.
Yes. Flies them. And it's funny because they go look at Berkeley while they're there because that's where Ryan's going to be going to school.
Yeah.
And they get handed a flyer for the George, the place that wants Summer to come work for them. And it's got like the Bullet on there because he's like basically an evil like tycoon. And so somehow they all, like, Sandy and Kirsten go there. Then Kirsten's like, I have to use the bathroom. So the nice people are like, whatever, come inside. That's totally normal. And her water breaks in their home. Like, that would be enough to make me want to move.
And, oh my gosh, one of the guys that lives in the house is a midwife.
What do you know? So we got all that going on. They basically appear to be staying at the house with these nice men and these strangers. Okay. And then we have Taylor, who has flown in from the wedding and clearly admits that she's still in love with Ryan as well. So she and Summer are talking, and Julie is talking to Caitlin. Julie's wedding's about to happen, and she's like, where's Kiki? And they're like, oh, they're up in Berkeley. They can't come here. And she's like, well, I can't get married without Kiki. So the Bullet just flies everybody to this Berkeley house.
And then they get there, and surprise, surprise, the other guy that lives in the house, a wedding planner.
What are the odds? And then Ryan and Taylor decide that they are going to have a little conversation and end up doing it in one of the bedrooms. So we got Kirsten's water breaking in the home, and then two, like, 19-year-olds doing it in the other room.
It's like spring break up there.
One of the guys walks in on it. So we get ready to have the wedding. Frank decided at some point, because Caitlin caught him, that he made a huge mistake. Shocker. He's still in love with Julie, but Frank is in Newport. So he calls Caitlin. Caitlin answers her phone during a wedding. Because I guess, I mean,
you know what?
People
at
are
this
rude
point,
enough to go up to somebody's home.
At this point, that's like the least realistic or the most realistic thing that's going on right now.
They hold the phone up. They're like, you need to make a decision. And Julie pretty much like doesn't, right?
Doesn't make a decision, or
she doesn't marry Bullet.
She doesn't marry Bullet,
doesn't marry
but she
Frank.
Also doesn't seem to.
I think she pulls a Kelly Taylor. Kelly Taylor in season 5 of 90210, when given the choice between Brandon and Dylan, was like, I choose me. And I feel like that's what Julie finally did. Like, yes, you could be like, oh, she chooses herself all the time, but she never truly believes in herself. She, and I think that's, I even, because at the end, you see that both men are still supporting. I do think she definitely likes Frank more, you know, from a romantic perspective, but Julie ultimately chooses herself. Then we got some more time that passes, and Ryan and Taylor seem to be back together in a good place, but she is going back to Paris, which I think is good. I think they're young at this point. They don't need to go to Berkeley together. That was never her original plan. So they have a very sweet moment, a very sweet goodbye. I feel like it's indicated that they still are pretty much together and happy. Seth basically tells Summer, hey, I think you should go do this thing in George. We know he's going to go off to Providence anyway. And he's like, we've fallen into a rut. This is something that you need to do. So we get a very emotional goodbye with Seth and Summer. How that goodbye got me a little in the feels the first time I watched it, and this time. This is the episode finally started to get better at about this point.
But the last
we had a lot of crap.
8 minutes.
They should have given this like a 2-hour finale. It was to the point, y'all, that like I forgot the beginning parts of the episode were even part of the finale because I had thought that was part of another episode.
See, I disagree. They should have just wrapped it up in a nice clean 15 and given us a strong 15 as opposed to the 40 minutes we got with like the
I would have liked, but it's clear to me why they had to put all that crap at the beginning was because they had all these storylines to flesh out like we were just talking
about. Yeah,
well,
they should have gotten the 4 episodes that they probably had scripted to get us here, and they didn't.
Sure. So we get the emotional Seth and Summer goodbye, and then Ryan goes back with the Coens, and we say goodbye to the set, the Coen house from season 1. I did like that scene.
Yeah.
We had some nice flashbacks of Ryan when he first arrived. The part that made me cry was when it showed like Seth on the floor playing video games, like young Seth from season 1. And I think that's one of my biggest complaints of the series is we were really robbed of Seth and Ryan scenes in those last few seasons. Like the first season, Seth and Ryan were brothers. They had such a great relationship. We got a little bit more of that in season two, but then so much of the relationship dramas kind of took over, and that was annoying to me because it seemed like they finally, like, I feel like they sort of tried at the end, like where they were making the list about when Ryan was hurt about how many people he's punched and all that stuff, and they tried to give us some Seth Ryan moments toward the end, but it almost felt a little bit too late. And like him, like seeing Seth in that scene just really solidified to me like how important their relationship was as friends, as brothers. Ryan gave Seth a confidence that he had never had before, and because of Ryan, I feel like people were able to accept Seth, and Seth was able to make some more friends where he had kind of just been this like lonely shell, like nerd, you know.
It was the relationship, it was the actual relationship the early seasons were built on.
Oh, absolutely.
And they really lost their way in season three, and then season four. I felt like they tried.
They tried to recover it, but it
tried a little bit, but it was too late.
So then we see him in the car, and it mirrors that scene from season one where he's looking, and you see Marissa standing there in the white top. In the outfit, just kind of looking.
They pick the quickest shot possible that shows her clearly the least amount of time.
But that's an iconic shot from the series. It's like one of the moments when I think about the OC that I visualize. And I do want to circle back to the moment with Julie and Summer before Julie's, you know, wedding that didn't happen, where Summer gave Julie the locket with Marissa in it. And you were like, oh, so they are pretending that Marissa exists. And I'm like, Daniel, you're ruining this beautiful moment.
Well, hey, listen, they had the flashback episode, and they showed, you know, young Summer and Seth and everybody Taylor. And Taylor in the classroom
Luke.
And I'm like, come on.
You're like, and
she would have been in there.
Maybe she was in another class. Maybe she was out of school that day. Yeah, it's kind of silly they didn't do that. But I did think that was a beautiful moment. Also, I felt like Julie was kind of giving Summer advice, and Julie basically said, like, now I haven't learned anything. 20 years later, here I am marrying again. I don't have a degree. I haven't done any of these things. And I think that was kind of Julie's light bulb moment to choose herself as well. And that was a good moment between the two. But back to that scene with Ryan in the car. When I think about certain scenes from the OC, there's certain images that pop to mind. The one of him carrying Marissa out of Tijuana, and you're not sure, like, if she's dead or alive or whatever. That scene of him seeing her as he drives by, and then, of course, you know, my mini Seth and Summer scenes that I like. And I thought that was a very well-done scene. I don't like it when shows just rely on flashbacks for their finales unless they are used properly, and I felt like that was used properly. It kind of was very full circle.
Yeah, well, it was less. It really wasn't flashbacks. It was
like memories.
It was Ryan having memories of this very important part of his life that had kind of come and gone in a flash, is how I took it. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I hate it when finales really heavily rely on flashbacks. But in this case, it was very skillfully
Brilliant.
It was skillfully used, it was less of a flashback and more of just like him reminiscing on this crazy time that he's had.
And he like remembered, you know, his time when Kirsten said that Ryan would be moving in and all of that. They'd also showed some pictures before the Coens left, like their first Chrismica picture from season one. And then we get to the montage where obviously more time has passed. And when I say that the OC finale is one of my top three or four finales of all time, I am referring to the last like minute or so.
Yeah, that's it. That's
because
it.
Because that montage, though, is amazing. That's how you do a finale. Give me the 2 minute, 1 minute montages forever and ever if you do it that good. I don't think anything. I think sometimes finales go too over the top where everybody like becomes like famous rock stars and all these things, and it doesn't quite feel as realistic. Everybody's endings on the OC fit. And my main complaint is that they killed off Marissa in season three, so she couldn't be a part of the finale. But for what they had to work with, it was good. So we start off, we have that beautiful song by Patrick Park. I love that song. I introduced you to that song before you even watched the OC. I know it used to be on your, back in the day when you had your iTunes playlist, you would listen to that one. And you would listen to the other Patrick Park song, the one that Seth and Summer kissed on in the coffee cart in season one.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
You did. And we have Ryan at Berkeley, class of 2012, which yes, the math does add up. Mr. Daniel making me pause during a montage scene.
I had a brain fart.
We have Sandy doing the job that is absolutely perfect for him.
Yeah, I agree.
Sandy Cohen would, of course, he would be a fantastic college professor. Like, he would be one, I feel like, that would teach. You'd be engaged, and he'd also care about the students, maybe even to a fault.
Yeah.
Be getting overly involved, but that's what the Cohen family does. Then we have Caitlin in class. It looks like she's who was struggling in high school a little bit, was doing very well in her math class. And then we've got Julie, who I think has one of the best scenes in the finale, who is graduated and got her degree, and you have that beautiful moment where it pans to the crowd of the bullet, say it again.
Bang.
The last time, bang. Mr. Hercules, Ryan Atwin's dad, Frank. And then we've got the little brother that now, obviously, it's weird that Marissa and Ryan share DNA at this point because they have a shared sibling. And then Caitlin, and they all have, I think it was a wink to the whole, like, Team Frank, Team Bullet shirts. They all have shirts that say Team Julie. And I just thought that was really nice. I think it's nice that even if she didn't end up with a bullet, that he did stick around to be a supportive figure to Caitlin and yeah. really to Julie and Frank. And I really like that Julie chose herself and that you see Julie Cooper was such a villain in the first season.
Oh, for sure.
And you really see, but you really started to realize, like, while she was so young when Jimmy knocked her up, she came from, you know, the wrong side of the tracks. She's never really had a chance to actually prove to see what she could do to believe in herself, and never really, from what we little we saw of her family, didn't have much family help either. And it was just really nice to see her take just such a change to become a better person and a better herself. And then my favorite part, we have the Seth and Summer wedding. So, like, the whole season, every time Seth and Summer would have a problem, I ruined it for you, even though I thought you should have remembered. I was like, don't worry, they'll get married.
I feel like you were reminding yourself more than you were reassuring
Anytime
me.
Anytime we'd have
I
a bump in
care.
The road, I'm like, their in-game is okay. I love it. I love where she it transitions that, and you see Summer walking down the aisle, and supposedly the lore of this is that where Summer sticks out her tongue and Seth rolls his eyes, that was actually Rachel and Adam. Which okay. I don't even know if they were, like, together in real life at that point, but, like, kind of, like, messing with each other. And I just thought that was cute. We pan. We do see Ryan and Taylor exchange a look. I always felt like you could interpret that as they did stay together, or, hey, maybe they didn't stay together, but they gave each other just, you know, respectful, knowing looks, indicating something. The writers have since said that, you know, that they were supposed to be in game. So, but I feel like they left it open enough that if you absolutely hated Ryan and Taylor, you could be like, whatever. I thought the knowing looks and glances showed it to me that they probably were together. What do you think?
I don't know.
You're not going to render an opinion?
No, I don't think so.
You ended up liking them better, though. You told me you did.
Sure, I agree, but like,
imagine if we had more time to develop them than what we did. If we had just a few more episodes. So did you end up liking them as a couple?
Yeah, they were fine.
And that's for fine is good for you, though.
Yeah, sure.
You interpret didn't absolutely
that
hate it.
However you like.
What?
You interpret that however you like.
But you've always said that fine on the scale for you is the same as, like, great, awesome on the scale for me.
I don't think that's how it works out, but...
Then what does fine mean for you? You told me
I'm fine with it. I'm totally, if they are together, I'm totally fine with it. It does not bother me anymore.
You literally told me once that your fine was equal to my good, and now you're trying. I feel like your scale depends on mood. Do you have, like, a fine, like, C minus, a fine B minus? What is
it's
fine?
It's in the voice tone with how I say it. That's how you determine.
You are a confusing individual. I ended up really liking Ryan and Taylor, and I know I liked them in 2007. I didn't, like, love them, but I did really enjoy it, and I felt like it breathed a different life into the show. I stand by that, and I am somebody that is a huge Ryan and Marissa shipper. If I had had my way, Marissa would have still been on the show, but, you know, she wasn't, and I think that, honestly, of all the other relationships that Ryan had, Taylor brought something out of him. She made him laugh. She made him smile. She was a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But Ryan's not exactly sane either with all his needs to punch everybody all the time. And I enjoyed seeing that side of Ryan smile more. So
I'm okay
with them ending up together.
Yeah, I will certainly agree with you that she brought out a different character in Ryan. That was a good thing for
absolutely.
Him and his growth. Yes, I agree with you there.
So I'm cool with that. But, you know, that's not Ryan's endgame, really isn't Ryan's story.
Correct.
So before we get to Ryan's story, we did see little Sophie Cohen, who is now, you know, a little girl. What do you think she'd be like now? I would love like a reboot with her. She'd have two brothers. She'd have one brother always punching people, another that could teach her the nerd things in life. She'd have Summer as her sister-in-law. I think she'd be probably Cuckoo Taylor as like a sister-in-law as well, assuming that Ryan and Taylor are together. So I think that could work out well. Now, before we move on to Ryan's portion of this whole like in-game montage, we did talk about Dr. Roberts being at Seattle Grace. I am going to assume, now obviously enough time has passed, that Dr. Roberts did die at Seattle Grace, because why on earth was he not walking Summer down the aisle? That's like my biggest complaint about that whole scene, because they made such a point the entire series about how much of a daddy's girl Summer was.
He got trapped in cement or you know, fell down 15
maybe
flights of stairs.
Maybe he was on the plane too.
Maybe he's on one of those airplanes.
No, but the plane.
That hadn't happened yet.
Yeah, that hadn't happened yet. And George was still alive at that point. Spoiler alert, George hadn't gotten hit by the bus yet, which, oh my Lord, here's our connection. I never thought I would. Oh, I can't believe I just put this together now. Oh, George on Grey's Anatomy, you know he dies when he gets hit by a bus, right?
I do, yes.
Do you know who he was protecting and who moved out of the way? Lindsay from season 2. That is who George stepped in front of. So Lindsay from season 2 didn't get hit by a bus. And what a wonderful world we live, y'all. Not where people get hit by buses, but all these connections. That's in it. That didn't transition well. So I'm just going to assume that's where Dr. Roberts is, right? Like, either,
yes.
Yeah, I don't know. So Ryan's point of his story is another full circle moment. He is working as an architect. And who does he see when he comes out of work one day?
Vagabonds.
Oh gosh, will you please go?
Just a kid sitting there with his bike looking all, you know, poor and down in the dumps.
Just like Ryan looked.
Yeah.
And then, hey kid, do you need any help? Is that what he said? Something to that effect. What's similar to what Sandy said to him.
Yeah.
So it kind of gives you the impression that Ryan is going to take a wayward youth, just like he was, in and mentor him. And the circle of life continues.
I don't think you can just take them off the street.
Snatching your kids. I thought that, I like that. I like a full circle moment where you still get character growth. One of my biggest complaints about finales is when they do full circle at the expense of character growth.
Right.
How I Met Your Mother. Let's see, I can think of a million shows that, like, it's like, why have more seasons than season one if we are just going to revert everybody back to their season one likeness? But if you do it correctly, like Ted Lasso did and The OC, then those little callbacks, full circle moments are worth it. So that last montage, what is it, like 2 minutes long?
Yeah, something like that.
That is why, Daniel, I consider The OC finale one of the best. I'm just going to ignore all the crap at the beginning of the episode, focusing on just the montage. What do you think about that finale? And if you didn't get emotional during that montage, you are dead inside.
Throwing away the first 40 minutes. it was a very satisfactory ending. Yes, I agree. With what they had to work with, obviously Marissa would have been, it would have been nicer to have,
yes,
Marissa being in that montage and seeing her, not necessarily with Ryan, but seeing her being a successful adult. But we weren't, yes, able to do that. What we had to work with was satisfactory, and everybody seemed like, again, like you said, everybody was in a good place, but
like,
it wasn't this.
I could see Marissa being a social worker.
But it wasn't this fantasy place.
You know, like if Marissa lived a social worker with how empathetic she was helping people, I could have seen her do that. But yes, I agree with what you're saying. We couldn't have Marissa, or agree what I'm saying and you're saying again. we're tired, y'all. I don't need, as much as I love Parks and Rec, the fact that either Leslie or Ben were supposed to be president, I always thought was stupid. And I love that show. And yes, it's a comedy, but do you agree with me?
Yeah, I never liked that.
And then, like, as much as I love One Tree Hill, the fact that they all became almost like low-key famous, it was like always insane to me. I definitely think that even though One Tree Hill lived way longer than it should, that the OC was still able to pull off a better finale, because One Tree Hill without Peyton and Lucas, like, they only did two little references to them, like the book that Lucas was reading at the beginning and then the stoplight thing with Peyton. And I always found, like, just knowing what we know about the showrunner from One Tree Hill, I really feel like he wanted to punish those actors. And you probably don't even remember the end of One Tree Hill.
No.
Like, it was not great. I like the joke, that's a self-aware joke that the finale episode made, where Summer is like, you know, these teen dramas, they just live way too long and go on way too long past their time. And that's probably, I think One Tree Hill probably should have wrapped it after season 4. But then we wouldn't have gotten Fugue State, Clay.
Maybe it would have been a blessing.
So I really did forget all that crap happened at the beginning of that finale, because the end of that was so good. When I think of good series finales, I always think of, obviously, Maisel did a great job. That's fairly recent. Ted Lasso, fantastic job. Of two really recent ones. Friends. Yes, did Friends tie things up with a bow? Yes, that's what I want. But it wasn't, again, over-the-top fantasy. It was just fun. You could make the joke about suddenly the surprise twins of Monica and Chandler being a little bit, but it wasn't like crazy. It fit for the tone of the show that Friends was. I like the Raymond finale. We've talked about that, where there was a little bit of a scare and they just went on with their lives. This was a finale that I enjoyed.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I don't know. I'm not going to be as glowing as to say that I enjoyed the entirety of the episode, and I disagree with you. I don't think you can just throw out 40 minutes because you like the last two. But
you're entitled to your wrong opinion.
The wrapping up of the storylines was satisfactory, even if the road that we had to take to get there wasn't the most, was a bit bumpy.
Yes.
And it got a bit bumpy at the end because they ran out of time, either from their own miscalculations or because the TV network was like, we're going to end you in February.
And we've talked a lot about how, because the show creators for the OC, they were very young. Like, he's said so many time and time again. He also did Gossip Girl, by the way. He said so many times, like, he learned a lot after the season 1 of the OC. Like, he would have paced things a lot differently. What we talked about, he probably realized that he put all these things into that first season. So, going back to the series as a whole, I feel like before we started this, I said that I honestly preferred One Tree Hill over the OC. I think I'm going to have to change my opinion a little bit. I think the two shows get compared because they came out at the same time. Chad Michael Murray was originally asked to be in the OC. I can't picture him as Ryan Atwood at all.
There's a lot more squinting.
He chose to do One Tree Hill instead. But One Tree Hill is just almost all drama. Like, there are some funny moments. Like, Brooke has some funny one-liners. But it is almost, like, straight-up all drama, a lot sadder. Like, all the adults are crazy on One Tree Hill. And the OC, even in those last two seasons, still had, even, like, season 3, as depressing as it was, it still had that comedic value. I feel like the OC ultimately had more heart.
I agree. And yeah, you had me thinking season 3 was going to be just this awful, dark, like, gritty.
Well, that's how my brain remembered
show.
It.
and it was much darker than the other seasons, but there was still that same OC comedy was in there. It was just a little bit more dulled than it had been in previous seasons.
I think because of how season 3 ended, the entirety of that was just so, like, tampered in, like, my brain.
Well, especially if you know that's where it's going.
Yeah.
Like, we watched it absolutely 100% knowing what was going to happen at the end of season 3, and it made everything that happened before it so much worse.
It was, like, stressful. And also, I think, as an adult watching back, like, at the time, like, One Tree Hill mostly focused on the kids, and you have, like, of course, Dan Scott being crazy, whereas the OC, you did get a lot of Kirsten, Sandy storylines until they decided to stop giving Kirsten any storylines at all, but whatever. Julie, Jimmy, before he, you know, decided to go be lazy. Caleb Nichol. And I found myself now being more interested in the family dynamics and the adult storylines than I did when I was, like, you know, 19 watching the show.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting, like, to think about, because, like, when you're younger, I probably was more interested in what the kids were doing. Like, so much stuff with Sandy and the Newport group, I had absolutely zero memory of. I'm like, I don't remember any of this.
Yeah.
I didn't remember that he and Jimmy, like, bought a restaurant together. I didn't remember any of that. And that was, like, what, like, season 2?
Mm-hmm.
Or was that even season 1?
It might
I don't
have been
remember.
Season 1, part of that.
Like, that was, I didn't remember any of that. So, I think I'm going to change my opinion that The OC was the better show and was the better written show, but that doesn't change that I don't have mad love for One Tree Hill, and I always will. I know you already are going to pick The OC, correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, anything else you want to say about the series as a whole before we get into some questions? From a teen drama perspective, just in general. You are a male that watched this. Most teen dramas are dominated by a female audience, although I do know a lot of males that did enjoy The OC more than stuff like One Tree Hill. If you want to kind of elaborate why you think that is, what you thought of it.
I mean, I think to a certain respect, it was less, it was more targeted at a general audience, whereas One Tree Hill, I think, whether it was subliminally done or not, was more targeted towards kind of a female audience, because mm-hmm. Ryan and Seth were main characters. Not saying that Nathan and Lucas weren't main characters, but they had more things to do on their own without the girls.
Yes.
Also, you know, I think for me personally, the fact that Seth was there representing that kind of nerd culture at a time.
Because you were a Seth.
At a time when that was not, like, I think everybody's got this, everybody's got blinders on, okay? It's only been, like, the last 10 to 15 years that being a Marvel fan and being a Star Wars fan and being Star Trek's still not there.
Someday it will be, though.
was acceptable, not just acceptable, but was actually mainstream, and everybody was like, yeah, of course I like the Marvel movies. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not how things were when this show came out, so it's kind of nice to see that representation. So from my perspective, that's why I like the show. It is my second favorite teen drama.
What is your first favorite? Oh, your Gilmore Girls?
Gilmore Girls.
Okay. And I think Gilmore Girls kind of can toe that line between teen drama but also a family.
Like, it's a teen drama, Hope.
Okay, but Luke and Lorelai were like one of the main, like,
Sandy and Kirsten.
I know, but like, you always wanted to know.
We had this conversation. It's a teen drama. All Everybody right. agrees with me. You're the only person who thinks Gilmore Girls isn't a teen drama.
I elevated a little bit above a teen drama, maybe because I'm putting it on a pedestal. I do think I feel like Dave Rogowski was like Seth Cohen light.
Sure, that was like proto Seth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think too, echoing your point about Seth though, like in the past, all the nerds were always represented as like really looking dorky. Seth was always attractive, and I feel like, you know, it was more of like he was lonely. Like he was actually what you would, what a real nerd would be. Not every nerd is going to walk around with like glasses and a bow tie like how they were pictured on TV before. I think that even though they were richer, they felt more normal in a way compared to the One Tree Hill kids. And one of the things that I really liked about The OC was, yes, we did have some love triangles, but not amongst the core four.
Right.
There was no, like, we never had Summer and, like, Ryan date. Like, she, like, hit on him and, like, what? Like, and they referenced that and made fun of it in season three. We never had, apparently there were plans to make Seth and Marissa date. And
I can't even imagine. I cannot even imagine that.
Can't fathom or picture it at home. I would rather like Marissa and Summer date each other than I had to witness that. Like that, just no. So are you ready to get into some questions?
Are these rapid fires?
They are rapid fire questions.
Okay, let's go.
All right, I will go first, and then how do you want to do this? Do you want me to ask you and then you take a turn, or me just ask all the questions?
We'll just go back and forth.
All right, so best season.
First season.
I agree. The first season is the best season.
Favorite character.
I'm still going to go with Seth, even though he did get on my nerves. We never do rapid fire correctly. I love Sandy Cohen. I know that's going to be your answer. And Seth really annoyed me a lot of the series. And I do think he did not have the best character growth. But I'm just always going to have a good spot in my heart for Seth Cohen. And y'all, it's because I married Seth Cohen. So I love you.
Okay.
Is that all you have to say is okay?
That's all I got to say. You already answered for me.
I said something really nice.
I love you too.
Okay, I know.
I was trying to make it about myself, being a Seth Cohen.
That's true.
Gosh, favorite couple.
Oh, so you are going to answer your favorite character as Sandy?
You already answered for me.
Oh, okay. It was my turn to ask the question, but favorite couple, Seth and Summer.
Yeah, Seth and Summer.
All right, least favorite character.
Boy, this has got a long. This is actually a long list on here, but I got a for Oliver. And it's
you stole my answer.
It's right up there with Oliver and little Gianni. But Oliver wins in the end.
I go with Oliver as well.
Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Character that deserved more.
Luke. I feel like
I agree with you. Go ahead.
Luke, they could have had, I wish they hadn't had Julie sleep with Luke, because I think that's part of the reason. But I think we could have still even moved past that. I think Luke, we were really starting to get to know Luke before that happened, like from a different perspective. And he and Ryan were even forming a friendship. And I really feel like they could have kept Luke on the show
longer.
Luke
was a more, okay, now I'm not saying that Luke should have been the stand-in for Zach, but Luke was a more compelling character than Zach, and he could have been in season two some sort of antagonist that would have been more compelling than Zach.
I wonder if even wanted him to be an antagonist, though, because what I started to like about Luke is like that he started, even though like he had the slept with Julie, but at the end of the day, that's on Julie. Luke's still a kid in the situation. Like, that's what you have to think. Like, at the time when I watched that as it was airing, I blamed Luke a lot more. And now I look back on that and I'm like, okay, he was a teenager. She was an adult. She was the one in power. But that aside, like, before that happened, like, we were starting to see Luke change as a character. So I think he could have been, like, somebody that could have been as sometimes an antagonist against the group.
Yeah, I suppose I didn't mean to suggest that he was, like, a villain or anything, or like, but yeah, like a foil occasionally. He would have worked really well in that manner for season two if they had decided. I think it seemed pretty clear they had just decided he was gone after season one.
Yeah.
So I would have preferred they had that character they'd established and he was compelling. I would have preferred they maybe change a few things in his development in season one and continue his arc on into season two. Is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Because he did have a lot of development. And I just wanted to see that more. All right. Least favorite storyline.
The weird Kirsten, well, not Kirsten, the Julie, like, whore house thing that they waved away as, like, no big deal. Like, that was dumb. What were they doing?
That was solved so quickly. My least favorite storyline was, there's a couple of them, but if I absolutely had to pick, I'm going to go with the whole Johnny Marissa mess.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a close second would be Ryan and Teresa baby thing.
Yeah, that one's definitely up there, too, because it didn't seem like it really mattered in the whole grand scheme of things, you know?
Yeah.
So, favorite storyline?
There's so many moments that I like, but storyline is a little different. And honestly, like, I'm going to, as much as I think season one is the best one, I really liked the comic book thing that they did.
Oh, but Zach, like, was involved with that.
Yeah, unfortunately. But it also helped get Seth and Summer back together, tore them apart, got them back together again. Because we're going for storylines, not moments, correct?
You're the one that wrote the questions.
That's what I think it means, like a storyline, an arc. And if it's not that, then it would be, I can't really, like, there's so many moments I like from season one, but season one's storylines were so rapid fire like this. Like, I never really, like, my head was spinning thinking about it. So I would, I did like from like arcs that lasted over episodes. I thought that was fun. And I just liked seeing Seth, like, be passionate about that.
Mine is Sandy and Jimmy getting together to do a restaurant, which led to the infamous meatloaf situation remembered from all those years ago.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? All right, musical moments.
Trey getting shot.
What you say?
Is there even, there's no other answer to this question.
Yes, there is. And that is, someday you will find me, with the whole Spider-Man kiss from season two of Seth and Summer.
Yeah, I'm going to argue mine's better because they were spoofing something else versus the Trey thing got spoofed everywhere.
Unlike SNL, I know, but for me personally, will always be the Seth Summer Spider-Man kiss.
Best guest star?
George Lucas.
7 of 9.
Nobody likes her, Charlotte Morgan in the OC. You got to take your Star Trek out of it. She was an awful character. If I'm going to actually pick somebody that was like on more than one episode besides George Lucas for a guest star, I probably, even though season four was bad, go ahead and do Chris Pratt because he was just funny.
His character was infinitely annoying.
Yeah. I'm going with George Lucas. Who are you going to pick? You cannot pick 7 of 9.
I just picked 7 of 9.
So you actually liked Charlotte Morgan on the show.
That was my favorite guest star of the show.
Oh my gosh, you are terrible. All right. Most boring character.
Zach.
Lindsay.
Character who had the best growth.
Julie Cooper.
I agree. It was Julie Cooper.
Character who had the least growth.
Seth.
Yes, Seth.
Whose end did you appreciate the most?
Julie. And then Seth and Summer. Tied.
I like Sandy's, where Sandy ended up. I think that's where he kind of seemed like through the series, he was kind of trying to figure out what to do with himself, yeah, because he started out at the DA's office and moved on and ended up back at the DA's office. But I think maybe that wasn't it. And I think teaching is where he ultimately deserved to be.
I agree with that. Ryan or Seth?
Seth.
Seth.
Summer or Marissa?
Summer.
Summer for me. Best villain?
Caleb Nichol.
Yep, that was mine. Favorite episode?
Even though I stand by season one being my favorite, I'm going to go back to the season two episode with the rain and the Seth Summer kiss and all those shenanigans. And that's also, we also get that episode, I think that's where Lindsay leaves and you have Marissa comforting Ryan in the rain, which is another beautiful moment with those two. So
mine is the season one episode right before the Chrismica episode when Luke gets teams up with everybody and like they all come together and realize they're on the same team, and the ending of that episode where they are all, where he's like, I guess I'm just, I don't even remember exactly what he says.
Is it about like his dad?
But then they all name off the thing, like Ryan's the guy that punches everybody, and yeah, Seth, the, you know, they all,
I'm Seth Cohen.
Yeah. And so I just really thought that was a great kind of episode, and I felt like I let down, to be honest with you, about what could have happened from that group of people coming together.
And that's, again, why we say Luke deserved more. I do agree with you. That is one of the best episodes and probably my favorite episode of season one, because that's where we found out his dad was gay, correct? Yeah. And then you had all those moments and just everyone, like, they all think, like, I, like, almost died or whatever.
Yeah, that's what she said. Yeah,
Marissa said something
about Tijuana, so, yeah.
And just Seth, like, I'm Seth Cohen. Like, that was good. I think ultimately I'm just going off, like, because I am such a Seth Summer shipper. That's why I was thinking that one. But that was a good answer. That was a good answer. If you could change two storylines, what would it be?
Why two? Why do I get to pick two?
I don't know why I...
Why did you write two? I'm looking at the question. I'm like, two?
You get two.
I mean...
Oh, I think I know, because one is obvious, and then the other I thought...
We're both picking Marissa not dying.
Yes, okay. Marissa not dying.
Okay, I understand.
That's why I did two.
I understand where your thought process is going there now. Okay. I think Frank Atwood being introduced, particularly so late, and again, maybe they had more plans for him and it just didn't come to fruition. I would delete that. I would get rid of it. Yeah. I would do something else.
Okay, so my other storyline that I would change, Sadie and Ryan. Like, they looked good together, but that was so weird. It was so whiplashy. Like, we go from, like, she's Johnny's cousin. We suddenly, Marissa and Ryan are broken up. And now Ryan is, like, they weren't even broken up yet, where Ryan was sniffing around Sadie.
I don't know what that was about.
It was weird, and it made me uncomfortable, and I didn't like it. Best holiday episode?
The first Chrismica.
I concur. The first Chrismica will always be iconic.
What would Sophie Cohen be like?
We sort of already talked about this earlier, but I think Sophie would, she's obviously not going to grow up in Newport, but she'll probably be, I mean, like Berkeley, like she'll have that like liberal, like elitism, I guess you could say. But I think with brothers like Seth and Ryan, who I think will be around a lot, and like we talked about, for sure, Summer as a sister-in-law, possibly Taylor, I think she'll have a good head on her shoulder. She obviously has great parents with Sandy and Kirsten. I could see her being like more like Kirsten from a reserve standpoint, but I could also see her, you know, Seth is teaching her about comics, books, about superheroes. Ryan, you know, she's got all these good people in her corner. I could see her being like her class president or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
The next generation.
However the writers choose to write her, should they ever revisit.
Would you watch a next gen OC?
I
would.
I would watch a reunion. I don't know that I would go with a next generation, because I just don't. I haven't seen a lot of those succeed.
Yeah.
And so
Girl Meets World was awful.
It kind of depends, I guess, like if it's a next generation, so it's not necessarily a reboot, but like a continuation, so to speak. So she's in it. Like, are you getting Sandy and Kirsten back to be parents? The more returning characters you get back, the more interested I might be. But if it's just that, like,
they've talked about doing reunions. Adam Brody is like the main one that doesn't want to do it, and I'm like, you can't do it without Seth.
No,
like even Misha Barton was like, yeah, I'd do it, even if her character is not alive.
I think I'm pretty sure one of our previous episodes I pitched yes, how they could did. Bring her back in that. So that's for everybody to find.
All right, guys, but that's it for the OC. It's been a fun journey. I've enjoyed watching one of my favorite shows as an adult. I'm sure I'll do another rewatch sometime of the OC in the future. I always watch at least the first two season Chris Mika episodes anyway with my holiday lineup. So this isn't goodbye forever, the OC.
Yeah, and if you want to listen, if you're somebody who's just kind of come into the podcast recently and haven't listened to all of our discussions about the OC, I have great news for you. Here in the next couple months, I'm going to start cutting the conversations we had about the OC over the past 6 months into supercuts and releasing them on our Saturday supercut time. So I think right now the way I've broken it up, I've looked at the timestamps and it's gonna be about a half a season per episode. So the first episode will drop probably in a month or two, and that'll be season one, part one. And so that's how we're gonna structure that. So if you wanna listen to us talk about the OC for the first time, or if you wanna listen to us again for some reason, you can do so. And also that brings us into, we are actively looking for a new show to rewatch. We've gotten a bunch of good suggestions from everybody out there. Hope, what suggestions have we gotten so far?
We have had New Girl, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Mad Men, Battlestar Galactica, Gossip Girl, Scrubs, to name a few.
Yep. And so Hope and I are here in the next couple days. We're going to kind of put our heads together and try and whittle that list down to about four. And then what I'm going to do is put up a poll on our link tree. So everybody, you'll be able to get to it. And we know we have some listeners out there who, you know, don't have Instagram for various reasons. And so we want to make sure everybody can vote. And so we're going to put a poll up. And we'll let everybody know where they can access that. Sometime in the May area, we will announce what our new show is going to be and get to watching it.
All right. Until then, see you guys next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of We Watch TV, a podcast about the TV shows we watch. You can find more from Hope and Daniel on Instagram at We Watch TV Podcast. Drop us a line if you like the show, have a question, or a recommendation. You can find Hope on Twitter at Lil Runner, and Daniel on Twitter at The Real Hobo Dan. Music for today's podcast was provided by Your Tunes from Pixabay. Artwork was created using the AI program Midjourney with prompts written by Daniel.